Welcome to this special edition of Let's Drink with Formal Shark. In this episode, we're going to look at self-regulation of the alcohol industry and how the Portman Group plays its part.
The work of the Portman Group has once again been in the public eye after a complaint by a member of the public. The group ruled that the tiny rebel Cooch can breached its packaging and marketing codes. This sparked a debate on social media, which resulted in one of our hosts, maybe me, sending a very opinionated email to the Portman Group. We wanted to discuss the matter on a podcast and thought we would send them an email expecting nothing back, which means we could have said in a discussion that they'd failed to comment. However, that did not happen. The resulting communication with the Portman Group resulted in this podcast, giving us some actual serious work to do. We believe in full disclosure and honest transparency, so we'll lay out now. In case you don't already know, we are massive fans and champions of craft beer in general. We are massive BrewDog fans. So much so, we're equity for punks. Although we'll be lucky if we own a few nuts and bolts in the brewery, we do have a vested interest. So now for the actual serious section.
Well, we're doing serious.
Yes, this
finally.
Week. This week we're going to be all Paxman. So what's the crack about the Portman Group? The Portman Group, the responsibility body for the drinks producers in the UK, which is funded by 10 member companies. That include AB InBev, Carlsberg, Heineken and Moore's Coors. The Portman Group's mission statement states,
they recognise that they have both a responsibility and a major business interest in reducing the harmful misuse of alcohol and pioneered a number of initiatives to educate the public about responsible drinking. These include unit labelling, a widespread promotion of responsible drinking messages and bringing about the creation of Drink Aware, an independent charity, which is now the main source of consumer information on responsible drinking. The Portman Group members continue to provide significant funding for Drink Aware's education and campaigning work. The Portman Group believe that a targeted approach with a focus on education and prevention is more effective than blanket controls in tackling alcohol misuse. Alcohol harm reduction measures should target the minority who misuse the alcohol rather than the majority who enjoy a drink responsibly.
They have a website full of free resources and training for anyone working in the industry and offer support and advice to help businesses stay within the rules that are set out. So they're the good guys, making sure the alcohol industry is responsible? Well, not everyone agrees. Books like A Quiet Word, Lobbying, Crony Capitalism and Broken Politics in Britain writes,
the parallels between the work of the alcohol lobby and the tactics employed by tobacco and sugar are striking. These include undermining scientific research that threatens profits, positioning themselves as responsible business, and shifting responsibility onto individuals rather than the government intervention.
The Independent on Sunday back in 1994 revealed that the Portman Group was at the time secretly paying academics £2,000 each to rubbish the conclusions of an alcohol report compiled by Emeritus Professor of Psychiatry at the University of London. And it's not just way back when. In as recently as 2017, the Guardian newspaper ran a story about the drinks industry downplaying links between alcohol and cancer. The Portman Group and Drink Aware are amongst those accused by academics for obscuring heightened risks of cancer in drinkers.
It is extremely worrying that the UK public are not being given independent, honest information about the health risks associated with drinking.
Said by Catherine Brown, Chief Executive of the think tank Institution of Alcohol Studies. Even a former member are not happy with the direction the organisation has moved towards. C&C Group, an Irish drinks company, on the 4th of June 2014... stated that,
sadly, the Portman Group has moved away from its founding principles and is now dominated by large multinational drink companies with an agenda at odds with wider UK industry. On this basis, we feel it's time to leave.
However, former chief executive Jean Cousins rejected any suggestion that the group
represents the industry
or acts as a
trade association or lobbying group.
However, many question this. Many academics question the independence of the research as well as the policies of the Portman Group. So, our contact with the Portman Group. Our first email to the Portman Group was very abrasive, with a standoffish, opinion-based email. so it would have been perfectly acceptable if the group had labelled us as loons and arseholes. However, they have been very nice to us and provided us with lots of resources and statements. It would seem that they are very happy to defend any criticisms levelled at them. Finding information on the Portman Group that is not on their own website is rather hard, especially positive articles that are not just stating their own research. This could be that the nature of the Portman Group's work is not very newsworthy, unless it is something controversial like the Tiny Rebel case. So what is this Tiny Rebel malarkey? A member of the public complained that the Tiny Rebel Kutch beer can wasn't obvious enough that it was an alcoholic drink, and due to the design, it also had a particular appeal to children. The Portman Group put all complaints to its independent panel. In this case, it ruled with the claimant. The statement from the Portman Group on their website says,
"In considering the image of the bear on the front of the can, and its positioning alongside the wording, Tiny Rebel, the panel agreed that the packaging indirectly encouraged immediate consumption, and, in the combination with the graffiti and swirling primary colours, caused the product to have a particular appeal to under 18.
The secretary to the Independent Complaint Panel, John Timothy, said,
"I welcome the way in which Tiny Rebel Brewing Company has engaged with the advisory service throughout this process, and their commitment to ensure the panel ruling is incorporated into wider work to evolve the brand. While it was clearly not the intention of the producer to promote immediate consumption, even indirectly, companies have to be extremely vigilant around themes that could be attractive to young people, particularly when designing 33ml cans, which in the UK are traditionally associated with soft drinks."
Extracts from a statement on Tiny Rebel's website named Kutch versus Portman Group, The Lowdown, says,
"We, Tiny Rebel, would never have thought that one member of the public, an industry body funded by the likes of AB InBev, Carlsberg and Diageo, and complaints panel made up of 10 people, can cause as much damage to a brand. But in the words of Run DMC, it's like that, and that's the way it is. One thing we should point out before anything is that we can't just ignore it. In a memo to the House of Commons Health Select Committee in 2009, the Portman Group stated that the code is self-regulatory, and therefore sometimes referred to as voluntary. This is potentially misleading. Compliance with codes is mandatory, and there is no opt-out for any drinks manufacturer. Facts are, we communicated regularly with the Portman Group over the past 5 months, and actually found them to be an alright bunch. And we obviously disagree with the panel's decision, but we have to do what they say because they have us over a barrel commercially. We're not the victim here, the industry is."
We recommend reading the full statement as it's a very interesting and informative opinion from a small member of the industry. Tiny Rebel did provide Let's Drink with a written statement as well.
"Self-regulation is the best option for the industry, and we are committed to being part of that process. It is important not to keep it at arm's length, otherwise it would be easy to see it has been pressed upon us. For this reason, we must be open, honest and vocal about our perspective. We must make our voice heard if we are to expect it to be taken into account. We will continue to support and contribute to the continuing improvement of the system by highlighting issues we encounter."
We also received an audio statement from John Timothy, the Chief Executive of the Portman Group.
"I'm pleased that the ruling on Kutch has prompted such a vocal debate. I think it's a positive thing that we're talking about what social responsibility actually means in practice. But we also need to keep in mind the bigger picture. Tiny Rebel had a product on sale that the independent panel ruled was in breach of the code. But they also moved quickly to make small amendments to design to make sure it complied. To my mind, that's a self-regulatory system that works and is helping to maintain high standards. The sale and marketing of alcohol is always under intense scrutiny here in the UK. And that's why historically the sector decided it needed its own robust system of self-regulation to protect children and the vulnerable, while also maintaining the freedom to produce and market great beers. Now the current system gives anyone the right to make a complaint about a product they feel breaks the code rules by, for example, appealing to under 18s or promoting immoderate consumption. The person who makes a complaint remains anonymous unless they work in the industry. to ensure the system can't be manipulated or misused for competitive advantage. All complaints are then considered by an independent panel who hear directly from the complainant and the producer rather than through third parties or from Portman Group staff. And that means the whole process is fair and transparent. But we're always looking at ways to revise and improve the code, taking into account the views of everyone in the sector, from the smallest brewers right through to global producers. Now, I can't ever guarantee that the code will be perfect, or that everyone will agree with every ruling the panel makes. But the truth is, the current approach works well for both consumers and producers.
The craft beer industry was awash with tweets over the matter. Here is a few that we have selected.
Neptune Brewery, at Neptune Brewery. Joke that one person can take it so far, and it's enforced by the Portman Group. Worrying what it could also mean for the future of the industry. Wishbone Brewery, at Wishbone Brewery. My email to the Portman Group about the Tiny Rebel Bruco thing. Hi guys, in light of a recent complaint that has been the hot topic across social media, I have a suggestion for your complaints procedure. It feels worrying that just one person makes a complaint, it can cost a business a vast amount of money in its recertification. Might I suggest that you should collect a specific number, say 20 to 30, of complaints from the public before action is taken? At Crema Brewery. Great post, but the Portman Group's decision sets a very dangerous precedent. One complaint can cost a small business 30k and potentially devalue its brand. This system is so open to abuse and needs overhauling. It also needs to address sexism in brand way.
So that's the stuff we found out. So we're now going to have maybe a bit of a discussion. Like before we have this discussion, do your own research on this matter. This is what we found out. But what we would say is go and don't just take opinions from us. Go out there, research. We are going to have a bit on our website with all this information, with our basic script written out in long form, like one of those Guardian long form things, so that you can look at stuff, paste it around. We're quite happy for you to share it wherever you want, where we've got stuff, and then loads of links underneath from everything from where we've got this information from.
I'd also say, you know, contact the Portman Group, contact breweries that have been affected and people, because everybody seems very open to discussion. Which surprised us a little bit.
I think that's the thing with anything like this, is that if, no matter your opinion on the Portman Group, if we keep silent as a lot of people, we're just fans and drinkers of beer, but also the breweries are affected and things like that. If we don't say, well, this is our opinion, then they can go maybe blind
to what the people want.
The people want, and they can be in good intention, but if they've not got the information, if then there's a screw through of information, and I would say, like anything, be quite open with your letters and things. So if you do, the tweet is good that brewery did, where they'd said what they were tweeting, because now we know their opinion on the matter. And that was one of the good things about this, is that we've got a lot of opinions from small breweries, and it was quite apparent when it came out that a lot of the opinions were coming from breweries and sort of craft beer fans. There wasn't that much like counter argument, but I think that was more just because of who it would affect. The people that would want to complain about the ruling were them people. I don't think it was a thing of the whole. I think that puts a very one-sided view of it all, because you're only getting that echo chamber that we would be in at that time. That then results in you going, oh well, I don't agree with this, because there was no alternative thing apart from what the Portman Group had come out with, and it then heightened suspicions that we'd talked about earlier on in the piece about the sort of Portman Group and where things lie. And I think the biggest nubs of all this is that it's a very complicated issue.
It is. It's not as simple as, well, you know, that can appeals to kids.
Yeah, and I think there's very much of a notion that we're both guilty of sort of good versus bad and all that, and it's just such a complicated issue, because you're going from, as an overview, you've got like this Portman Group that then financed by these 10 member companies are the big boys in the industry.
Yeah.
That then have this regulation that then sets what they think is acceptable. And that then sort of comes round to, well, who makes sure the Portman Group are acting in the best interest? You know, are they acting in the best interest? Are they an organisation that have got an agenda or not? I don't think we've come to an
actual
depth. And other bits of research, you can't 100% say, well, all right, they're just maybes.
I mean, I think this is the interesting thing about self-regulation in various industries, is there's always the question of who and why, and you've got to be very careful when you self-regulate, because if it's not including everybody, you get a very kind of polarised or one-sided regulation, which from reading could be part of an issue here.
Yeah.
And
it does seem like you can abuse the system with only one person able to complain, and like BrewDog themselves abused the system with Tokyo. James Watt complained to the Portman Group. They got all the hoo-ha and all the media attention through that, basically playing the Portman Group at their own game in one way. But it just shows that, and since this has come out, I've started really looking at packaging. We've got one that I got for Christmas off somebody that...
So we've got here, it's Parrot Bay Frozen Mojito. It's one of these drinks in a squeezy thing.
Now, if we put this to the Portman Group, they may ban it. We don't know if it's ever gone through that. They may say that it's charged, but the general concept of these pouches and these blue drinks, to me, seems a lot more child-friendly. And when you look at the past cases on the group, and there's a fantastic little game you can play. I don't think it's meant to be a game. But
if what has, you know, things where it's been upheld that the packaging doesn't meet the regulation, and things that have been, you know, allowed through. And to both me and you, it does seem a little bit hit and miss. Sometimes you can see the reasoning why and you kind of agree. And sometimes it's like, but actually there's multiple reasons why that might have been stopped.
But it's anything that's quite
through.
Quite arbitrary.
And that's it. It is. It's arbitrary. Who is setting the actual rules? There seems to be a very basic kind of,
well, it's that whole thing of what's childish.
If somebody complains, then it's a group of 10 people that turn around and go yes or no.
Yeah, it's what appeals to children. And I think my view of it is different to somebody else's view. Somebody thinks, okay, well, having massive writing on something saying it's alcoholic is acceptable. Somebody else thinks, well, actually the imagery on something would appeal to children. And it's that, it's not a panel I would want to be on myself, you know.
No,
I think it's
definitely not an easy thing to be dealing with.
There's that thankless task of the chances are you're gonna pee somebody off, and especially within the craft beer, where there's massive loyalties to certain brands. You know, we have certain brands that we are very loyal to, although we'll criticise them and stuff. If we think somebody's sort of affecting them or on their turf, not on their turf, that sounds like a turf war, but
you know, there's issues that is kind of stopping them from doing what.
Yeah, we're going to automatically, as people like the brand, and you get to, you know, with social media, you get to know the brewers themselves, and there's sometimes a relationship sort of in your mind forms.
Yeah.
You know, like the same with podcasts and stuff like that. So.
And it's very interesting. I mean, we were having a discussion the other evening all about this, and talking about, you know, how do we decide what's childish, and this whole regulatory body.
Yeah. See, my whole thing is as soon as you question it, then somebody turns around and says, in this sort of situation, as soon as somebody disagrees with it, they will then go straight to the point of, well, I disagree with this, it's funded by the big boys, so then it's there, therefore it's an agenda. And it's a big circle that to me constantly makes the problem that stops you able to sort of 100% say, well, this is an independent...
Yeah.
It's self-regulation with an independence. There's that sort of...
Yeah, there's always that question of,
yeah,
and is this truly independent regulation?
Now, how else do you fund it? Or how else do you make sure that it's not there for abuse? One of the tweets said about 10.
Yeah.
10 people. Now, it depends, because we don't know how many complaints they get. If they only get like one complaint a month and that's it, then that sort of system would never work, because nothing would ever get up to that amount.
But you've got to be very careful, because obviously you don't want, you know, if things to be against the rules, and it's quite easy for things to slip through, especially in a large industry. But you do need to make sure that there's enough complaints behind it to not ruin the whole system and make a mockery of it. And maybe it is this, the Portman Group just need to reassess their whole system behind it, because it is open to abuse.
Maybe the Portman Group need to be better at advertising the positives that
because they do have positives.
You know, we found, or I certainly found it very hard to find independent positive stories, because I was trying to, you know, make this balanced thing, and there was a lot of booyah, they suck. And I think that was because of the emotive issues that come out of that.
It's similar that they are the complaints department of a company, and you only see the negative.
You know, then trying to find out about the sort of drink away stuff that they do, the sort of drink driving complaints, the safe spaces that they're doing research in at the moment, you know, where the happy clappy people help you out.
Yeah.
And if you're drunk, get you home, or the old fashioned drunk tanks, and I think there's been,
call them like pastors and street pastors.
Yeah, and I think like sometimes they give you like for the women in big heels, or if you've got your big heels on, they'll put,
I don't wear big heels.
They'll give you like slippers.
Yeah. And there's positives, because Portman Group do fund and they help start the whole drink-aware system.
I think
that's
the interesting thing, because the culture's changed dramatically in the last 10, 20 years of drinking, from when we were kids, when it was, let's drink as much as possible. Has sort of the drink-aware stuff been a positive impact in that, or is that a wider culture thing that's going to happen without it anyway? With the food and stuff. If it's a lobbying group, that there'd be suggestions that it is, with the sort of hiring of the ex-Tesco lobbyist as CEO, then that then again put some questions into things.
Yeah.
Of, well, are they trying to sway the parliamentary side of things in a way of like, oh, don't look at this, like the tobacco industry did.
Yeah.
And I think that's why it's so complicated. It's all these little parts that come together.
And it's multiple things. It's not just, you know, if it was more or less straightforward, a lobbying group, you'd be like, well, it's a lobbying group.
Yeah, that bit's the lobbying group. That bit's going to do that.
But they're not. They're a big group of big boys kind of thing who have a mandatory say. This is the other thing. It's mandatory that you comply to their rules.
Yeah, because if you don't, they'll then send out a... is fatwa the right word?
Yeah.
A document, or they'll send out to all the suppliers saying, don't use this. And then if they don't comply, then they'll start contacting the local authorities. So I mean, naturally, as a business, then you have to.
So it's not true mandatory. It's bullying, basically.
Yeah.
Because they're not saying if you have to follow these things. They're saying if you don't, we'll tell people not to buy your stock, your stuff.
And one thing I was trying to find an answer to,
essentially a cartel.
Yeah. And I was trying to find like an answer to, but what happens if you disagree with this all-knowing panel? Because, as we see with courts and things like that, it can pass through lots of different. Yeah.
And it's supposedly an independent panel of 10 people, but is it truly independent?
It's hard to...
You start and question it when you look at the other parts of the Portman Group and the way that they have previously conducted.
Yeah. So I think my whole thing with this really would be that would be just more openness.
Yeah.
With everything, and the more open this becomes, the more you can look at it all and say, all right, well, I don't necessarily agree with this, but I can't come to these assumptions based on it.
Yeah.
And the other one would be working out a system that doesn't just rely on one person that goes straight to a panel, yeah, and that negative effect.
So you know, a better complaints procedure, yes, more robust, because one person's view is not necessarily reflective of everybody else's.
Yeah, so I think the sort of the panel and how it's there is probably almost there. It's not something that should just be like ripped up and completely hoied out.
No.
Having an independent
The underlying idea.
I think there's just a point where discussion needs to be made, and especially now we're in a situation where contacting people is easier, people get offended a lot easier. We see Twitter, you know, a Twitter storm just over this happening, and you can see that sort of quickly.
You get a lot more polarisation.
Yeah. And I think a system that would have worked maybe more in the past, when you had to maybe be proper asked to write a letter
put it in the post and pay that 20p for a stamp. You know, it does take more
effort. I think that then puts more effort.
You know, in terms of it being self-regulation, raises questions, and maybe the Portman Group needs to consider the encompassing members of the group, because, you know, 10 members, that's not many. That's the same number of people they've got on their independent panel.
Yeah.
And whether it's right or wrong, maybe, you know, people just don't want to be part of it. But it still raises questions if they're creating rules which are mandatory.
How do you fund this so it's independent? It's not like, it's not a tax or anything like that on the consumer or the little brewery, but how they have a say and make sure
has their own say. Because, you know, the industry is a drinks industry, is very wide. Because what affects a craft beer brewery is not going to affect, you know, one of these people that makes, you know, cocktails. Yeah. That's the word. The different industries, sub-industries within a bigger one, and trying to self-regulate across that with only 10 kind of players behind it, mm-hmm, seems personally quite limiting. Whether they've got an
opinion. No, that's just that's it. But they're the people that finance it. I think I would hope that the Portman Group contact a wider range. There's nothing saying that they don't contact and have a lot of say with the smaller people within the industry or different things. It's just that them 10 people finance it, and that tends to, it's why yeah, what as a business, and this is me being my sort of,
you skeptic head.
Skeptic head is, why does a business that tends to be main aim to make money, why do they then fund this? Is that the social conscious? It quite could be. But then when I see the ills that the alcohol industry have, of, you know, rampant sexism within the industry, sort of cheap alcohol, it's still the reluctance for stuff like minimum pricing.
Yeah.
That's got pros and cons, but the alcohol industry itself seems to be very against that idea. And things like that. It's like,
There's always the questions.
Yes, and I think that's my view on it all. So I think, just to sum up our little discussion before I do the sum up.
Oh, sum up.
So summing up our little discussion is,
It's not...
There's no black and white here.
No.
There's no
single final
solution. Yes.
And things can be better.
Yeah. I think if we split things down, my message to sort of the consumer and members of the public, that we all are, our social responsibility is to make sure that big business, government, work in our interest, and things that could be dodgy. Now, I'm not the sort of person that wants loads of regulations, but we need to make sure that with any drug, that it's controlled in the correct way, and that's definitely not prohibition.
No.
Within the industry, sort of my message would be just to to again make sure everybody's working together and listening to the consumer, also the government and things like that, and working with everybody, but not sort of fudging statistics and stuff. And then the same with sort of the Portman Group as a looker after of all,
yeah,
them.
It's a regulatory body.
Yeah, it's to just be as open and honest about everything as possible, and then people can't accuse things, and then I'll not have to do a ranty email.
Yeah.
And I think that's my messages.
Yeah, no, it sounds fair. Isn't
it? Our closing remarks. The drinking culture has changed for the better in the last 10 years. Is this a result of the Portman Group's work? Is the Portman Group's failing that people just don't see the positive impacts on the industry? It does appear that the Portman Group has been painted by some as a lobbying organisation disguised as a self-regulating body. As an organisation, we don't have the resources to conduct comprehensive research. However, we hope that this episode has collected together some existing data and opinions and has sparked debate amongst the public, the industry and the Portman Group. Go to our website for loads of links and copies of the original email that sparked this off. You've been listening to Let's Drink with Formal Shark, a Formal Shark production that has had our opinion on the Portman Group and self-regulation. This has been edited by Phil and written by Phil and Bob.